Transform the way you hunt with the all-new Base cellular trail camera connected by the Moultrie mobile app. Moultrie Mobile's industry-best app gives you complete control over your camera settings, up-to-the-minute updates from the field, and other interactive scouting tools on your smartphone or computer. Features like weather forecast, advanced species recognition, interactive maps, and a whole lot more. For more information and to make your purchase, visit www.moultriemobile.com.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast, which is brought to you by Tacticam. This is your home for all things outdoors in the Badger State, and I am your host, Josh Raley. We've got something a little bit different for you this week, something that I have personally never done before, but hey, we're right here around the holidays, and over the last year or so, I think our audience has probably somewhere close to doubled in size. And so I thought I would bring up an episode that I did last year with Alex Comstock. Now, if you're not familiar with Alex, head over to whitetaildna.com where you can find all of his videos. You can find his blog posts. The guy's awesome. He's got his hands in a lot of different things. He's grinding away this year. I think he's up to like 50 sits or 40 sits or something like that. But one of the things that I know about Alex is the guy gets it done in the late season. And that's what we're talking about in this episode specifically, is late season hunting. That's an area where I have really struggled. I have never killed what I would consider a late season buck. Now, I've killed some bucks later in the year down south. That's when our rut is kicking in that January, February timeframe. But I've not killed a true late season buck in the state of Wisconsin. Alex, though, gets it done in the upper Midwest. And so he's got a lot of knowledge that he drops in this episode. You'll have to excuse me. I was actually sick when I was recording this episode, and so you may hear me kind of clicking around, a cough drop and that kind of stuff from time to time, or clearing my throat. But it's a great conversation, really good information from Alex here. Now, as we jump into the episode, I do have a couple of housekeeping items. Number one, if you're not following us on Instagram already, please go and do that at the Wisconsin Sportsman. That is the best way to, number one, get a hold of me. It is the best way to let me know of topics that you want to hear about. It's the best way to let me know of guests that I should be interviewing. It's the place where you should tag me in the photos of the deer or the pheasants or the geese or whatever, so that I can share them and show people what our listeners are up to around the state of Wisconsin. Number two, if you have not left us a review wherever you access this podcast, please go and do that. We would really, really appreciate it. And then finally, I do want to say thank you so much to our sponsors who make this show possible each and every week. Number one, Tacticam. They are the title sponsor of this show. They are the best point of view cameras on the market for hunters and outdoorsmen and fishermen. Their new 6.0 camera is absolutely unbeatable. Next up, Onyx. There is no other tool that I use more than my Onyx hunt app. I'm getting ready right now to dive into some postseason scouting. It's not really postseason, but hey, it's after when I'm going to be hunting and looking at about a 30,000 acre chunk of public land that I'm going to try to dissect. I think my goal is to walk something like 100 miles. I haven't quite settled on what my goal is going to be, but you better believe I'm using Onyx every single step of the way. That app is packed with features. One of the ones that is kind of one of my favorites now is their exaggerated elevation feature. What that does is let you go into the browser map and you can actually exaggerate the elevation of the ground that you're looking at. What this means is when you're looking at a really flat place like the spot where I was hunting in Wisconsin, you can turn that exaggeration all the way up and all of a sudden it begins to show you terrain features that you just could not see with topo lines. They did not exist according to the topo lines, but once you exaggerate the elevation, all of a sudden you can see, oh, there's this little knob there and there's this little depression right here. And just so happens, that's where I killed my buck a couple of weeks ago. So go check them out. If you're not already using Onyx, you can go get a free 7-day trial. Just search for them at your preferred app store today. Then finally, Huntworth, they are making comfortable, durable, warm camo without the sticker shock of some of the other brands. As we get into the late season, their new Heat Boost line is going to be huge. If you're looking to try to stay a little bit warmer this winter, I highly recommend their Heat Boost stuff. I was wearing the Saskatoon pants, the Saskatoon vest, and Saskatoon jacket while I was in Wisconsin, and I had zero complaints. The stuff is quiet, it is durable, it blends in well with that Tarnan pattern that I was using. I'm a big fan of that. And with their new Heat Boost technology, it's allowed them to reduce a lot of the bulk, to reduce the weight while still keeping you warm. You can find more from them at huntworthgear.com. Now let's jump into the show from the vault with Alex Comstock. All right, joining me for this episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast is Alex Comstock with Whitetail DNA. How you doing, Alex?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, man. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate you you taking the time to chat with me today. For those who may not be familiar with you or Whitetail DNA, why don't you fill us in? Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, so I, like you said, run Whitetail DNA, which is pretty much just everything to do with whitetail hunting. You know, focus mainly on, you know, a blog and a YouTube channel. So if you look at whiteTailDNA.com, you can find a lot there. You know, YouTube is where I kind of focus a lot of my time now. We're putting out videos and I put out a lot less written content, but pretty much it's anything to do with deer hunting and, you know, stuff in the off season, shed hunting, some turkey hunting in there too. But yeah, so just pretty much if it has to do with deer hunting, I'm probably doing it.
Awesome. Yeah. Hey, you know, you said you don't do as much written content anymore, but your written content is really, really good. So guys, if you want to find out some good stuff or get some good tips and tactics and that kind of thing, Whitetail DNA is the spot for you. Why'd you sort of make the switch there with moving away from written content, doing more videos? Is it just a time thing or is it, you know?
Yeah, pretty much a time thing. When I started Whitetail DNA, I didn't know how to take pictures or make videos. Sure. I knew how to write. So that's pretty much where I put all my time. And as I, you know, we were kind of talking off air, but now with what I do for a living, I, you know, own a video production company and a photography business. And so it kind of just transitioned that way. And so a lot of the written content that I do now is actually more like freelancing. So I still write quite a few pieces a year, but like most of that's going to like North American Whitetail or other, you know, places that I'm freelancing for. And, you know, my goal for 2022 now, I guess, is going to be to try to get out some more blogs, even if it's one or two a month, but kind of get back into where I started and doing a little more writing again, kind of see where that goes.
Yeah, good deal. Good deal. So tell me a bit about how that transition happened, because, you know, honestly, until I started getting ready for this podcast, I thought you were still like working for the man. Come to find out, man, you've branched out and like blazing your own trail. So what are you doing now? And what did that transition look like for you?
Yeah, so pretty much, you know, I'm relatively young, 26 years old, and
dude, that's real young. That's real young.
Yeah, yeah.
It didn't feel that way when I was 26, but it's real young.
Right. Yeah, that's so I've been told. But I, you know, I'm getting married this year, and you know, I've been with my fiance for a long, long time, and you know, a couple of years ago, we were like, you know, I've always wanted to be self-employed, and kind of going with the video photo route kind of seemed like the way to go. And, you know, we talked and decided now, which, you know, a couple of years ago, that was the time to do it before we were married and had kids and had real responsibilities. Mm. Well, you know, when it was just us two, because when I first started my business, you know, there wasn't much coming in.
Sure.
And, you know, when it's just us two, you figure it out. But when you've got other people to worry about, it's a little more of a commitment. So I wanted to be long established before that happened. So that was pretty much the why. And I've been very lucky with business being awesome. So
man, that's great. Yeah. That's a super wise move on your part. Like to say, you know, to project and say, you know what, kids, other things going to just complicate this whole thing if we want to step out on our own. And so to be able to do that, you know, before you get married, that's a big step, man. Kudos to you.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on today is you recently killed a stud in the snow in North Dakota in the frigid temperatures. Now, I'm from the deep south. To me, somewhere around 45 is getting chilly, and I'm guessing it was quite a bit colder where you were. So, but before we get into that, though, I do just want to hear, you know, you hunt all over the place. So tell me a sort of a season breakdown for you. Like, how did things go for you this season?
Yeah, so I started out the year, typically every year I start out opening week in North Dakota. That's what I've been doing since I went to school out there and for college. So
and you call that Minnesota home now, right?
Yep, yes, okay. Where I'm born and raised, okay, is Minnesota. But yeah, typically start out in North Dakota. This year I decided to start out in Nebraska. I've hunted Nebraska every year. And I think this is my sixth 6 year hunting Nebraska, and I've yet to fill a tag down there. And
kidding.
Yeah, and so my cousin, I mean, we got a new piece of property down there that we thought was going to be, you know, pretty much the shit opening week. We had a nice big food plot and everything, and you know, ended up we had shooters showing up on cell cam literally the night before opener in daylight, and then opening day hit, and it was like the Dead Sea. And so opening week in Nebraska was kind of a bust. Come back home, hunt Minnesota pretty hard, to no avail, pretty much up until the rut. You know, one of my top target bucks that I was after got shot and was never recovered, but we never got pictures of him again, so I assume he died somewhere. And then went back to Nebraska for the rut. I had about, you know, I kind of set aside about two weeks to hunt the rut pretty much every day. And I should have, in hindsight, I should have went to North Dakota first, but I went to Nebraska because I kind of had this vendetta against Nebraska wanting to fill a tag. And it just wasn't in the cards. First day of my rut trip, I got close, and then the hunting kind of just sucked. And I was planning on being in Nebraska for like 6 or 7 days, but I bailed early, went down to North Dakota. Had some awesome hunting in North Dakota during the rut. Actually, some of my best rut hunting I've ever had. Ended up missing a really big deer that I clipped a branch and deflected. So that was a big bummer. Sheesh. Came back to Minnesota, came back home, and transitioned to hunting a different buck that I wanted to go after my top target had died, and ended up getting him a couple of days before Thanksgiving. So that was awesome. That was the first buck I had killed since the previous September. So it had been a little, little while for me.
When does the rifle season come in Minnesota, or gun season?
It's first week in November, and it's like 3 weeks. But where I do all my bow hunting is actually in city limits, so I don't have to worry about rifle hunting.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. So, which is sweet.
Yeah, I've heard Minnesota, like Wisconsin, gets just pounded.
Yeah.
And that's tough having those dates aligned with the rut.
Yeah, it's tough. I'm, you know, that's why I focus most of my Minnesota hunting in, you know, there's a city bow hunt that I'm a part of, and it's just really tough outside of that, you know, which I'm sure if I spent time out there in the big woods, I could figure it out, but I just prefer, you know, I've got spots where, you know, I killed my buck, it was, I mean, like an 8 minute drive from my house. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that's tough to beat, man. That's real tough to beat.
Yeah.
And especially as you get married, as you start to have kids, like those places close to home, you can't, man.
Oh, yeah.
If you've got good spots nearby, like those are irreplaceable. It's cool to go for a trip, but nah.
I'm totally with you.
8 minutes from the front door is where it's at, man.
Yep. Hop in the truck, get there, and walk in, and you're good to go.
That's right. So you're in Minnesota. You killed right before Thanksgiving.
Yep.
Tell me the story. Tell me a bit about that buck.
Yeah, so that was a really cool buck. I called him Squiggly. I don't really know why I called him Squiggly. Trail camera pictures, it looked like he had an odd G2. It kind of had like a little squiggle in it. So me and my buddy that I hunt with, we called him Squiggly, and had a few years of history with him. Passed him 2 years ago. It was just a, you know, a nice little 8-pointer pretty much. And then he was really nice last year, probably like a mid 130s inch 10 pointer. Never really focused on him because I was hunting this other buck that ended up getting killed this year. At least I'm assuming he's dead. I'd hunted that buck all last year, and I was hunting that buck again all this year. And then once he had gotten shot, it kind of made me switch my focus to Squiggly. And while I was gone hunting the rut in North Dakota and Nebraska, he was like cell cam in daylight every day, of course.
That's you know. About right. That's how it happens. Yeah.
And so then I got home, and I had a really good idea of where I was going to kill him. I had hunted the stand a few times late October, where I had hung the stand, and got in there. So pretty much the spot that I have is big hill, and I got to stand on the top of the hill, stand on the bottom of the hill. And I was hunting the bottom on the 23rd of November that morning. He was on cell cam up top at like 8 in the morning. And I was like, all right, well, he's up top. And typically when he's up top, he ends up bedding on the top of this hill somewhere. I mean, it's like, it's a huge, you know, it's like 400 yard difference. And he would bed up there, then work his way down to in the evening. So I was like, all right, I'm hunting 23rd evening. I'm hunting in the bottom again. And that night he went by up, cell came up top once again. So I was a little torn on the 24th if I should go hunt that up top stand or come down low, because I was like, he had been on cell cam on both spots a lot, you know, generally speaking, in the last couple of weeks. I decided to go up top again, and he gave me an 18-yard shot. He came by that morning at like 8 o'clock, and I actually got really lucky I got him. I messed up, and I was shooting in my yard the day before, had my single pin set at 25, and I was just mental lapse, forgot to put it back to 20, and, you know, I always climb into a tree stand with my single pin set at 20, and so when he was there at 18 yards, I just assumed my pin was set for 20. I never checked, and it was set for 25, and it was just enough where I shot pretty high shoulder.
Okay.
And right away, I knew this was going to – chances weren't going to be good. And I actually tracked him a mile that afternoon. The next day, brought in a tracking dog, went another half mile on the blood trail. We caught up to him on Thanksgiving Day. He was still alive. And then I ended up finding him the next morning, so about 50 hours after I killed him or shot him.
50 hours after
and he had him. And he had just died, I'd say, within a few hours of me finding him.
And how far had he gone total at that point?
He ended up dying about 200 yards from where I shot him, but he ran about pushing on 2 miles.
Jeez, so just made a big circle.
Exactly, yeah.
My goodness. Man, well, I'm glad you recovered that deer. Is that hunt on YouTube right now?
It hopefully will be today, whenever as we're recording on the so I'm working on it.
If people stop bugging you to record podcasts, you can go edit this video and get it up on YouTube.
Yeah. It's on the to-do list to finish today. I got it pretty close to finished up. So
nice, man. Nice. Well, that's awesome. So how does the rut activity play out there? So one thing I noticed living here in Wisconsin, you know, the first almost 3 weeks, all the way up until gun season, I saw just fantastic rutting activity this year. I mean, I'm talking, I was seeing good activity the last few days of October, and I saw several bucks chasing, one buck standing out in the middle of a field on the day before the rifle opener or the gun opener this year. And then when that gun opener happened, man, my cameras just shut down everywhere.
Yeah,
it was like the deer were like, oh, it's not the rut anymore, we're done, we're sick of breeding, we're over it, and we just want to live. How does the activity rutting activity look over there where you're not having to deal with gun pressure?
It's I'd say like you definitely don't see that where it comes in and all of a sudden it shuts off, but it's consistent, but it's not like, I don't know, this year, the last couple of years, I feel like the rutting activity hasn't been, actually, I should backtrack. This year wasn't the best, but I also didn't spend a lot of time during the main rut here. But like last year, for example, I had some of my best hunts that last week of October, and I was having sits where I was seeing 7, 8, 9 bucks. And, you know, I mean, it was bucks, you know, sparring and scraping and everything around me. And then this year, it was like the Dead Sea that time of year. And I had a couple decent hunts early November before I left out of state. And by the time I got back, it was third week in November, and things were pretty slow as far as rut movement is concerned.
Yeah, that's interesting. We had a lot of guys around here saying, you know, I know one group of guys was like, man, our deer rutted real early this year. You know, we had our best hunting we've ever had, best rut hunting we've ever had the last week of October. And then I had other guys that were like, man, there was no rut this year until those last few days right before gun season. So I think it was kind of a weird – that lines up with what I've been hearing a lot of people say. It was just a weird year.
Yeah, I'd definitely put it in as a weird year. And we had some weird weather, too, this year. I always think that doesn't help. Like, if you can just have a lot of, you know, nice cold days during the rut. But this year we had some interesting weather.
Yeah, that second week in November got pretty warm, huh?
Yeah, it was the second week in November, yeah, where it was pretty warm.
Yeah. First week was okay, but it wasn't cold. I mean, it was nice, but it wasn't, you know, no big cold snaps coming through. It was just kind of stagnant.
Yeah.
Just want to take a quick minute to let you know that the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast is brought to you by Tacticam, makers of the best point-of-view cameras on the market for hunters and anglers. They're on the cutting edge making user-friendly cameras to help the everyday outdoorsman share your hunt with friends and loved ones. Their new 6.0 camera has a ton of upgraded features this year, but the one I'm most excited about is the new LCD touchscreen. In my mind, that is a total game changer. And one area Tacticam really shines is with their mounts and adapters that are made with the sportsman in mind. If you've tried to film your hunting and fishing excursions, you know just how frustrating it can be to try to get an action camera aimed just right or get it attached to your weapon or in a good spot for a second angle. Well, Tacticam makes all of that a breeze with their line of mounts and adapters. This fall, I'm going to be using their stabilizer mount on my bow with the 6.0 camera and their bendy clamp paired with the 5.0 wide camera for a second angle and to make sure I don't miss any of the action. To learn more and check out their full line of products, head over to their website, tacticam.com, and share your hunt with Tacticam. I alluded to this a little while ago, but one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because of this deer you just killed in North Dakota. And not just that, but the first time I ever heard of you actually was for a story you'd written for North American Whitetail, I believe it was, of a really nice deer you'd killed in the late season. And when I saw you kill in the late season this year, I was like, man, this guy kills deer in the late season. And I can't say that about a lot of people. And I certainly can't say it about myself because I can't find any deer in the late season. Like I have a really tough time. And I think there's a variety of reasons for that. But so walk me through sort of this late season hunt for this deer in North Dakota.
Yeah. So North Dakota is an interesting place to hunt because you can hunt anywhere that's not posted. You're allowed to hunt essentially. And so, you know, non-posted areas are fair game. Now, for anyone listening to this that's going to go hunt North Dakota for the first time, landowners can post their land electronically. So you got to check on North Dakota's website, or if you have Onyx, Onyx has a layer that can show you if it's electronically posted. So that's a little caveat now. But if it's not posted, you can hunt it. And so I've been hunting. My original goal was to hunt where I was hunting the rut, which is a small sliver of timber that's part of a huge river bottom system.
So this is an open private piece?
This is a public piece.
Public piece, okay.
Yep. And it's pretty much like a sliver of like 40 acres that's a part of a huge, huge, long river bottom system. It's like the only timber around pretty much. And that's where I hunted during the rut and had some phenomenal hunts. My plan was to hunt there late season. And the deer just weren't coming through there, weren't showing up. So then I decided, I actually had a buddy out there who had scouted out a pick cornfield about a mile or so away from where this river bottom was. And the trails coming into this pick cornfield were just like, you know, it looked like cattle paths coming in there. I mean, it was nuts. And so the first night I sat the river bottom piece, didn't see much. And my buddy had did a little drive around for me. And there was like 40 deer in this cornfield at the end of the night with a couple nice bucks. And I was like, all right, I probably should figure out how to try to hunt this. And we decided to try to build a snow blind because there's zero cover. I mean, literally just a wide open pit cornfield. So it's like, you know, how do you try to hunt that without getting busted? And so I built a snow blind, essentially, like almost like a half igloo. And I'd put out a ghost blind that another buddy had given me. And tried that. And the first couple nights, I mean, was unreal. I mean, the first night I saw probably 100 deer. Jeez. And they're all coming from that same river bottom system, just down from where I was hunting pretty much, coming across a wide open field into my cornfield that I was sitting in.
So you can see them coming forever.
Yeah, from like literally a mile away.
Dude, that is nuts, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, had this blind, you know, half little snow blind with the ghost blind, and the deer were just skittish enough because deer got behind me, and the ghost blind, for anyone that doesn't know what it is, you know, on the outside, it's like mirrors pretty much, mm-hmm. reflects whatever in front, but the inside's green. So deer that would get behind me into the next over field, which I couldn't actually hunt, you know, so deer coming behind me, they're off limits, but it was like a nothing field. So they were just kind of coming through that field, coming behind me and then working their way over to the cornfield. Deer that get behind me would bust. The ghost blind, because it's just super thin, would kind of move around enough because it was windy out there. I couldn't stake it down because the ground's frozen solid. So it would kind of move around enough where deer were a little spooky. I actually had a buck come in that was going to come right in. He ended up veering out to about 35 and I actually missed him. And it was like, now I'd missed two bucks in North Dakota this year and I was just, you know, kind of down. And so long story short, going forward, I decided to ditch the ghost blind and like build every day. I made some modifications to the snow blind, but it ended up being a couple feet high corn stalks in it where I was just kneeling below the edge of it and would pop up when I needed to try to shoot a deer. So
yeah, I saw those pictures on Instagram. It was pretty intense. If you're wanting to see some pictures of this blind, it was pretty sick. So I want to hear a little bit more on that ghost blind though. So I've got a buddy who has one, hasn't used it yet, and I've considered using something similar. And I don't know, man. I just have zero faith. So in the deer that spooked, let's say, is it only the ones that were getting behind you or the ones that were seeing the movement? Or do you think, like, were they just kind of like, that looks like nothing's there, but something's there and I don't really like it?
Pretty much that's how I felt. I think the ghost blind, I mean, I had never used one before, and after using it, I think in the right scenario, it could work really well. You know, if you're sitting tucked up against something, you know, nothing's getting behind you. You know, you've got cover around you and that's going to reflect everything around. I think it could work super well. But just sitting out in the wide open, which is why I wanted to try it, it just didn't jive as well as I thought it was going to with the deer.
Yeah. Well, they got close. If you had a muzzle loader or something in your hands,
it
would have been lights out.
And it's the fact that it's not like I was seeing 10 deer, you know, a few deer coming by. I mean, I had, you know, crazy amounts of deer within 60, 70 yards of me.
And they're just hanging out.
Yeah, exactly. And so to try to beat, you know, if you got 50 deer on you, trying to beat 100 eyeballs, I mean, something's going to pick you off.
Yeah, I do well enough to beat two.
Yeah.
So to think about beating 100, that's pretty tough. So, yeah, so you built this blind, which really intrigued me. I had an episode when I was a teenager. I rolled up to a little green field where there was just no way I could get close enough to this green field. And the only pine tree that hadn't been cut down had just fallen into the middle of the field. And I went and like laid down prone on the ground in the top of this pine tree, and deer came out and got all around me. I ended up missing a doe that evening. So it was a pretty sweet experience. Nice. So when I saw you doing the snow blind, it brought me back to that. So I was like, I need to hear a little bit more about this. So it was a couple feet higher. Are you just like squatting down inside of it and like peeking over, or are you able to kind of see over it all the time? Like, how are you staying hidden?
Yeah. So I would pretty much just sit on my butt. And when I was sitting down, it was over my head quite a bit. You know, if I needed to shoot, I needed to kind of get in position on my knees. But I figured, you know, I'd hunted it for 4 or 5 days. So I got quite a bit of experience quickly on what deer tolerated, because I would get busted by deer. They would kind of run off and then the next wave would be coming. So I would kind of readjust. But long story short, yeah, I would sit down. Deer, you know, if I needed to see something, I would really slowly try to pick my head up and try to peek over the edge. And anytime I did that, it was like fair game for deer to bust you. You know, I was in white camo too. But, you know, if I would have done it again, I would have built it up a little bit higher and try to build in some peepholes, you know, like little windows almost.
Yep. Yep.
That would have been like really nice to have. So, yeah.
Yeah. I saw one picture where like your legs were stretched out and I'm pretty sure you were taking a nap.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I'd get set up early enough and deer were like clockwork when they start hitting the field. So, you know, got to get a little rest in beforehand.
There you go. So you were on this hunt. How long had you planned to stay?
I was planning on staying when I hunted a Thursday, and I was planning on heading out Sunday night after hunting. So the 19th of December.
But you didn't leave on the 19th.
I did not. So day one I missed. Well, day one, I hunted that river bottom where I didn't see much. So day two, which was my day one of hunting the snow blind, I missed. The next night, I actually got busted by three separate shooters throughout the night, which is just wild.
How close were they getting?
All were within about 30 yards.
Oh, gosh.
And so,
and you're still alive. Like, you didn't have a heart attack. That's impressive.
I thought I was going to. And it was so like one was a really, the biggest buck I saw out there, you know, 150, 160 inch 10 pointer. And he was coming right in, and, you know, when I see him coming from a long ways away. And so the whole time, you know, my brain's racking, I'm like, how am I going to pull this off? Because like getting deer to come through in bow range was not, when I say not difficult, like it was happening with the snow blind, it was mint. But the act of trying to get up and get a shot off with a bow was very difficult. And so this buck's coming in, he gets about 30 and I'm like, all right. So I try to like barely move up and, you know, I'm trying to draw the bow when I'm still below like the edge. So like, and then pop up, but it's kind of like a one movement as I'm going up, I draw and the buck just caught the movement enough as I come up and he kind of just ran off 30 yards. Now he's standing there looking at me at 60 and then just starts feeding again. And, you know, so I'm like, so, you know, gosh darn. Well, then pretty much the same thing happened again and again throughout that night with different bucks. And I was really bummed. And it was crazy to me that I was seeing so many deer having such a great hunt. Yet by the end of the night, when I was walking back to the truck, I was pretty pissed because how many people can say they have three shooters come through in one evening and they can't even get a shot off?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
man.
And by then on that night, the blind still hadn't, I still hadn't built it up as much and I didn't have any corn stalks in it. So I think that's when the next night I had made some more modifications where it was really dialed. And I felt, you know, having those corn stalks kind of come over the edge too, I think kind of broke up my outline as I kind of popped up. And so the next night I had a really nice buck come in. It was the one warm day. So another thing with this whole hunt, every day you're talking around 20 below zero. I mean, it was very cold. And on the 18th on that Saturday, it warmed up for one day and it was like 30 degrees. I figured deer were going to move late and they did. And I had really nice buck come in last light, got to full draw, popped up, and I just didn't have enough light to make out where to shoot. You know, I could see my pin, but it was a kind of like a black blob.
Oh yeah.
And this was my last night, theoretically. It was Sunday night. And, I just didn't feel comfortable letting an arrow fly. And so I thought that was it. And I got back to the truck and called my fiance and was like, you know, pretty bummed, you know, and it's like, all right, I'm headed home and, you know, had it close again. And she was like, pretty much, she goes, you're not coming home. And she's big on Christmas, holidays, all that stuff. You know, we do a lot of holiday family stuff. And she's like, you're not going to be crabby for the holidays. Stay one more day and shoot a buck. I was like, all right, I'll stay one more day.
That's wife material, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So I stayed one more day and if you want me to go into it now, but the last day is when I was able to make it happen.
Yeah, go ahead. You know what? One question before you get any farther. Are you hunting mornings?
No.
No. Okay. So you're just trying to get work done, that kind of thing in the morning, maybe scouting around a little bit. As you're going back to this, so you hunted this same spot four different times, is that right? So it'd been Friday, yeah. Saturday, Sunday, Monday?
Yep.
All right. What gave you the confidence to go back 4 days in a row? Is it just the deer sightings? Is it just the, man, this is the only game in town right now? Like, what gave you the confidence? Because, you know, I'm thinking a place that is available for hunting, surely after getting busted by three shooters in one day, like that field has got to be taking a hit from the pressure, but it doesn't sound like you were doing any damage.
No. So I think it was a mix of all the perfect conditions. A, it was the only, when you say the only game in town, like it was the best food source in the area. I mean, this cornfield had, I don't know what they did when they picked it, but it was picked terribly. Just so much corn in this field.
Okay.
You know, full corn cobs. I mean, just loaded. And so the mix of that, the mix of the temps, you know, like I said, other than the one day when it's 20 below zero deer, it's almost like, you know, people say during the rut deer throw caution to the wind. I found in my, I guess, deer hunting career, you say that I've had the best success late season, but like when you have those really terrible conditions, cold, snowy, windy, deer almost throw caution to the wind just for survival because they want to eat.
Yep.
And when it's that crappy. And then the other factor that I had going for me is like the first 3 days, almost every buck I saw, I didn't see any repeats. Like it was different, but it was like different bucks every night. And there's so many deer coming out. I mean, even though I was seeing probably like 100 plus deer, you know, every time I would be walking out to the truck, walking back to the truck, I could see across towards the river bottom where there's deer, and there's just more and more and more deer coming. I mean, it was just, it was honestly stupid. And so the fact that I'm seeing this many deer, this many bucks, it almost seemed kind of dumb to not go back there.
Sure. Sure.
You know, so my thoughts was either go home or hunt there.
This episode is brought to you by the OnX Hunt app. OnX gives you up-to-date landowner information, color-coded public and private land boundaries, and gives you a ton of tools to help you hunt smarter. One tool I'm loving right now is their optimal wind feature, which lets you set the optimal wind for a given location, then tells you in real time whether the wind is good, bad, or just okay for that spot. You can try it risk-free for 7 days right now. Just download the OnX Hunt app on your preferred app store today.
Yeah, that's a good thing for people to learn, because we can take things like first sit, best sit, and mobile hunting and sort of really overemphasize them to the point that we end up shooting ourselves in the foot because we leave a spot that's hot because we feel like I need to go find another food source. I've hunted that one once or twice or whatever. Tell me about your access to this spot, because I mean you're trying to get out with 60 deer around you, I'm assuming they're not feeding past you and feeding off, right? So how are you getting in without the deer seeing you, with it being so wide open? How are you getting out without just ruining everything?
So I honestly don't think a lot of people would believe me unless they saw it, but I was hunting. So I was about 45 yards off a dirt road.
Okay.
So when people would drive, every once in a while, people would drive by and you know, they could definitely see me. And I would just, you know, what are you doing? And so that's where I would park about a mile down the road at a little tree line, walk about a mile down, just right down the middle of the dirt road. And I'm pretty confident deer would see me because I could glass deer bedded on the edge of the river bottom. And then I would just walk right in. And being so close to the road, deer actually would feed past me. And so they would feed down the cornfield a ways. And so I would pretty much sit there till about pitch black. And there'd be some deer around me, but the deer were they're a lot more tolerant when it's pitch black.
Yep.
So I would just sit there. And then, you know, a majority of the deer had either fed past me. There was deer that hadn't got to me yet. So I just get up, walk my 40 yards to the road, head to the truck. And it was like, you know, it was like, it was never even there.
Yeah. And by the time you're on the road, they're not really, counting you as danger anymore, pretty much. So were you doing anything to clear the field, or you're just trying, you know, like coyote howling or anything, or you're just trying to sneak out as quiet as possible?
Okay.
Well, it obviously worked, because
yes,
the final day of the hunt, I see you had posted a short video of yourself walking in, and I forgot exactly what it said. It said something like one more go or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, good luck. And next thing I know, I see a picture of like blood in the snow. And I was like, it worked. So tell me about how the last hunt went down.
Yeah. So the last hunt, headed in again, just stupid cold. Actually, it was the coldest day. I felt the most confident because the day before had been the warmest day. So it went this whole time it was cold. It went from the warmest day to now the coldest day. And, you know, I'm sitting there and deer start piling in. And actually that big, big buck that had busted me two nights prior, it was the first time I'd seen a repeat buck, and he's coming back in. And I was like, all right, here we go. And he comes in to about 40, and kind of going back to what we were kind of talking about earlier, but being that he was one of the first repeat bucks that I had seen, he came in like spookiest, you know, like he was looking for something. And I had no chance. Kind of once I even just started to pop up, he kind of just took off, you know, ran a 50 yards and kept feeding. But I was like, all right, so it's early. It was like 4:15 and I could shoot till like 5:10. So I still had an hour. And then next thing I know, I look up, and the craziest thing was, so the spot with all these deer I was seeing, they would kind of come across to me and in droves. So it'd be like a group of 10, a group of 15, here comes another group of 10. But I look up and here comes like a group of 50 deer coming at me, coming across this wide open field right at me. And I throw up the binos and there's two good bucks in the back. I was like, all right, I need to let all these does get by me and then hopefully get up for, you know, a shot. So I'm sitting there, and you know, the funny thing is as I'm crouched down, I'm not popping up, but I can just hear these deer walking by me. And I had to have had does within like a few steps of me, and they're just walking by. And then going back to hunting right off the road, anytime a car would drive by, which was not often, you know, I'm pretty much in the middle of nowhere, but every once in a while you'd have a vehicle come by. When you had a vehicle come by, the deer that were in the field would run way down the cornfield, you know, and if the deer hadn't made it to me yet, they would turn around and beeline it back to the river bottom. And so got all these does coming by me, and then all of a sudden I can hear a truck or a vehicle like in the distance, and I kind of like turn my head, look back, and a ways down the dirt road I can see this truck coming towards me. And then I kind of poke my head up, and the one of the good bucks is standing in the middle of the road looking at the truck.
Oh.
And I'm like, all right, like these guys are either out of here or they're going to come to me, you know? And truck got a little closer. Well, then those two bucks all of a sudden. And so when it comes to filming, I'm actually a little bummed because I had my GoPro sitting on the top of the snow blind because this was like impossible to film, and had my B cam facing back at me. Well, the GoPro had died like immediately because of how cold it was. And so on the video of it looking back at me, you just see me go, all right, oh shoot, they're coming in hot, really hot. And because what happened is when this truck's getting closer, instead of them turning back to go to the river bottom, they ran right at me. So this truck kind of gave me a little of an assist, and they ran in, and the bigger buck, it was a pretty big one, ran by at like 50. And the one that I got came right in at like 15 yards. And so it happened so fast. I just drew back. I popped up, and I thought he was going to run by me without me. I wasn't going to let an arrow fly at a running deer. And I was literally following him. Like, you know, you got a shotgun on a bird, like just following him. And I just yelled at him, hey. I didn't stop. And he's getting all the way to my right. And I literally at the top of my lungs, I go, hey. And he stopped and looked right at me. And I just buried it right on his heart and let the arrow fly. And I watched him run about 80 yards and take off and go down.
Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. So what a hunt.
It was one of the coolest hunts I've ever done / been a part of.
And down to the wire.
Yeah, like, at about 20, 30 minutes left. Yeah.
Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. So tell me about the buck then.
So he's an old 7-pointer. Actually, so that river bottom piece that I hunted the first night, we have trail camera pictures of him there. So in the course of about a week, he had moved from there about a mile down the river bottom and then would come about a mile over to the cornfield. So I think that spot was just deer were just coming from pretty much every direction. And, you know, because the first night that I had hunted, when I didn't hunt that spot, my buddy had drove by and saw like 40 deer in the field. And by the last night, you know, there's just literally hundreds of deer coming into this field.
That's crazy.
So yeah, big old mature 7-pointer. Just a really cool, you know, unique looking buck. And
he's a gnarly looking thing.
Yeah.
Like from the pictures, you're like, dang, that dude's old. Like, I don't know how old he is, but he's old.
Pretty much how I felt. And he's not, you know, he's not going to rank in my top whatever for biggest bucks, but he's probably going to be one of the top, like, most proud. I was, like, so proud that I got that buck.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hanging with it, man, in the cold temperatures like that, like, that's impressive. So another reason that I wanted to talk to you about this, obviously, was to hear the story of your season, hear the story of this buck. But I also want to know, like, how did you make it work with the temperatures? You know, like, I'm from the deep south, man. When you say negative 20, I'm like, I would die. Like, I would freeze to death in the blind. That truck would have had to stop and pull me out. Like, I don't know what I would have been able to do. Now, I'm working on it, right? Like, I've been hunting in Wisconsin. I've hunted in some cold temperatures. So what's your layering system look like? What's your clothing? Like, what are you doing to try to stay warm and still when it's negative 20?
Yeah, so it's actually crazy. So that buck, I've shot two bucks in colder temperatures, and the one I've shot, this is my third coldest temperature buck.
That's ridiculous. You need to work on your early season game.
I know, right?
I'm kidding. Well, you know what? Let me ask that question real quick. So, man, I've seen you kill early season deer. I've seen you kill deer in the rut. I've seen you kill late season deer. where does late season rank for you? Like, do you just love the punishment of it all? Or
I joke with my buddies and say that I'm just a terrible hunter until December.
I mean, you seem to have unlocked it, man.
I mean, I've got this little book right here that's next to me. I keep track of every deer that I've ever killed. So let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So 6 of my bucks have come in the month of December. So, I mean, definitely like my best month out of any out there. I don't know. I think where I live and where I hunt, North Dakota, Minnesota, you know, all those years that I killed, it seems like the conditions are just terrible. You know, when you get a ton of snow, really cold temperatures, to me, that's just like screams big bucks, you know, and the winters that we've had, mild winters, it's late season can suck.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. So largely weather dependent, largely food focused, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
So then tell me, you know, I want to figure this game out too, right? Like I want to be able to get out there and kill one in December when it's negative 20. So what are you doing to stay out there?
Yeah. So layering, so I wear an all first light stuff. And I, you know, pretty much the biggest takeaways or the biggest piece of advice I would have is pretty much every piece I'm wearing until my outer piece is a type of merino wool.
Okay.
And cause it just wicks moisture so well. You know, even the walk from my truck to that snow blind, which is like a mile down the road, I'm really trying not to get sweated up, because you get sweated up, you're screwed.
Yep.
And then there's so many good, you know, if you're not wearing first light, there's so many good companies and so much you can do to keep your core and your legs warm. You know, it's proper layering. The biggest challenges I think people have, and same for me, is your extremities. You know, when it's that cold, it's how do you keep your face, your fingers, and your toes warm? Mm. For me, you know, so I'm wearing LaCrosse Alpha Burley 800 gram boots, but I think it really doesn't matter what boots you're wearing as long as you're wearing a good insulated boot. But I wear a merino wool next to skin sock, and then I've got a hand holders or hot hands foot warmer. So I get a full foot warmer that I put on. And then I put it's called a heat holder sock over top. So I've got two socks, and you got the merino wool, the foot warmer, and then it's like a thick wool. And then one of the biggest hacks that I found that has made a huge difference is I took out the liners or the insoles of my LaCrosse boots and put in a different insole, and they're actually by UGG, and they're sheepskin insoles.
Really?
Yeah. And so this is my first year using them, and they're awesome. They make a huge difference.
That's crazy, man. Okay.
And so that sheepskin liner actually wicks moisture, keeps your feet dry, while also serving as like some extra warmth.
Wow. Okay. So layering on the feet, layering everywhere else, merino wool is pretty critical. Are you wearing any other like heated vests or anything like that?
No, I have a lot of, I bought like the jumbo pack of adhesive warmers from Hot Hands.
Oh yeah.
So I've got hand warmers, foot warmers, and those adhesive I'm putting on each like kidney pretty much. And I put one on my stomach. And those put out quite a bit of heat to help kind of keep my core warm. And then I obviously got all the hand warmers for my hands and whatnot.
Okay. So, you know, first light is not cheap camo.
Yeah.
But it's good quality. I've never talked to anybody who bought it and was just like, man, I'm so disappointed that I bought this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So as I've been thinking about upgrading, I'm looking at all the different brands and stuff, and I'm wondering how something like that's going to hold up to the briars that we're going to get here in Wisconsin, Minnesota, those kinds of places, you know, mid-season, let's say in November.
Yep.
You know, I come out covered in beggar's lice from head to toe. How do they hold up in those temperatures, or is this something better saved for late season?
No, I mean, they've got, you know, because they've got other pieces where I'm wearing right now, you know, the warmest of the warmest, but they've got other like mid-season and whatnot that hold up really well.
Okay. Sweet. So I'm curious, as you are wrapping up your season, so you're actually going to be the very first episode of 2022, I believe, for the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast. So I was thinking about what could we do in this episode, kind of kicking the year off. You know, we're making a few changes here at the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast for the year ahead. We're going to move to weekly podcast episodes instead of biweekly, and a couple other things are coming down the pike. So I'm curious to hear, though, as we begin 2022, do you have any whitetail resolutions? Like, do you have anything where you're like, this is what I'm doing different this year, or this is what I did last year that was really stupid and I'm going to stop that?
I mean, I've got two things on my mind that I don't know if I'd call them necessarily resolutions yet, but more so goals for this year. And the one would be I want to become a more proficient archer / better capitalize in the moment, if that makes sense. So I haven't missed many deer in my life, but this year I missed 2 bucks in North Dakota. And then the one I killed in Minnesota, I got very lucky on and almost messed that one up as well. And that just kills me because I feel like I spend so much time dedicating myself to this, and I practice so much, and it's like that moment of truth is, you know, I think what really separates the best hunters, you know, not necessarily even like big bucks, but the ones that always, the guys that you're like, man, they got another one. They always get them. Like, you don't hear about the people that, you know, get that opportunity every year, but they miss half the time, you know, or screw it up.
Yep.
Like, I really want to hone in on that and put my practice regimen this year, put myself in this like practice situations where, when that moment of truth comes, I just handle it a little bit better, I think.
Yep.
And then my other goal, which I'm kind of setting this year, is I really want to shoot a booner.
All right.
I've never, and so that's going to, not that it's about, like, I'm not an inches guy at all.
Sure.
I never have been, but it's just kind of a goal I want to set for myself. Even if it doesn't happen, I think it's like a reason to, you know, I like, especially like in business, I always set my goals like way high.
Yep.
And I just want to set a goal like that, that'll just drive me to do like the extra thing on a, whatever it could be, asking another permission property, getting out there and getting up another camera on a property I don't want to, or stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. I think that's great. One of my goals this year is to shoot a Pope and Young deer on public. I haven't done that. Uh-huh. So, I'm not an inches guy at all. You know, I do not care. I shot a small 7-point this year and I was just as pumped with him.
Right.
As I would have been any other deer, but you know, next year, you know, it's not about the inches. It's about like you said, pushing myself to go a little bit farther, you know, having that goal out there. So one of my, not regrets, one of the things that made me sad this year was the fact that I shot a buck on the second morning of my rutcation, and that was it. You know, then it's like, well, there go, you know, my rutcation's over. My bow season is over. You know, we got gun season, but you know, so I want to hold out for something special. I want to enjoy the full experience of a rutcation. Now, if a Pope and Young deer walks by on the second morning of my rutcation next year, I'll shoot it, but or miss it wildly. one of the two is going to happen. I'm either going to scare it real bad or I'm going to get him. So anyway, but yeah, no, I totally get the goals, man. That's great. That's great. Well, what can we expect from Whitetail DNA in the year ahead? Any cool stuff coming up?
It'll be just more, you know, this year I've actually have slacked on just the amount of content. I'm going to really try to transition to weekly videos.
Okay.
So get something up every week, you know, and then it's going to be, like I said earlier, a little more written content, I hope. And hopefully just a lot more good stuff coming and big deer falling and shooting turkeys in the spring and finding big sheds. And yeah.
Sweet, man. When are you going to start shed hunting?
Probably in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. Deer seem to start dropping pretty early around here usually.
Okay.
So January is where you can start finding them. So.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I still haven't unraveled that game. I found one shed last year and I didn't walk a lot of miles, but I still haven't quite pieced it all together here. Shed hunting's not really much of a thing in the pine thickets of the South.
Yeah,
you'd walk through and pick up rattlesnakes or something like that. You don't want that. So
yeah, no, thanks.
Yeah, yeah. So all right. So you got shed hunting coming up. Turkey season. Are you hunting in Wisconsin this turkey season? Did you put in for the draw?
I haven't. When I've hunted Wisconsin turkeys in the past, I always did the like extra. I don't know how I did it. I'm not. I should know more.
Yeah, just leftover tags. You can usually get some. Yeah. You can usually get them for like the fourth, fifth, and sixth seasons for sure.
So other than that, I'll be hunting turkeys here in Minnesota. Do that now. Kind of started a new tradition with my dad last year. And my dad hadn't turkey hunted in like 25 years. And he got a bird last year, so it was pretty sweet.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so my dad got one, which was awesome hunt. It was like, you know, first 10 minutes of the first morning that we hunted. And then I always go down to Nebraska. And even though I haven't killed a deer in Nebraska, I have great turkey success down there. So
are you having success on public in Nebraska?
Pretty much all private.
Oh, pretty much all private. And there, are those Miriams where you're hunting or hybrids or?
Mainly Easterns, but a few hybrids that are like mixed. But I'm in the eastern part of Nebraska. So,
okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Well, man, I appreciate your time today. Thanks for coming on and chatting with us. I just thought of, I'd love to have you on later on as you get serious into your practice regimen for this year, because that's one of the things that I want to work on too. I actually wounded two deer this year, so I didn't miss. Last year I missed a really good buck. This year I wounded a doe because of a technical malfunction with my mask, and I wounded a really, really good buck because just freaked out and he was super close. So just a really difficult shot angle. So anyway, we'll have to talk more about that, but thanks for coming on the episode. Where can folks go to find out everything that you're up to?
Yeah, you can either just go to whitetaildna.com or just go to YouTube, type in WhitetailDNA, it'll bring it right up, and that's where hopefully all the most recent content will live. So
awesome. Well, Alex, thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
That's all for this week's episode. If you dig this podcast, be sure to go and subscribe wherever you find your other podcasts. If you would, please go leave us a 5-star review. I'd very much appreciate it. You can follow along with all my outdoor adventures on Instagram at the Wisconsin Sportsman. That's also the best way to get a hold of me. Big thanks to our partners, Tacticam, Huntworth, and Deer Lab. Please go support the brands that support this show. And until next time, make sure to take the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.